Hello and welcome to another episode of The Coder Career. Today's guest is Gav van Leeuwelt. Gav joined me to talk about lessons learned over 20 years in the software engineering industry. We talk advice for breaking in, what we'd do if we were junior developers in 2023, and as well about if you know if management is for you or not. The intersection between software engineering and business leadership is often not as discussed as much as innovations in the web dev area. And for the vast majority of software engineers who aren't working on these like crazy bleeding edge technologies, you're going to amplify your career much more by working effectively with business leadership. So if you want to hear more about that, just listen on. If you want to support the show and make sure we put out high quality content, please consider joining the Patreon. The Patreon bundles in with my YouTube content as well, so it's almost like you get two for the price of one. No pressure, of course. If it is a financial struggle, I recognize we're in a cost of living crisis, so please only join that if you can afford to. Also, while we're on the topic, a quick plug for my YouTube, actually. It's just Cameron Blackwood Code, getting quite a lot more traction on there than usual recently, so I'd love to keep that up. Anyway, you've tuned in today to hear about engineering leadership. You haven't tuned in to hear about me doing some self-promotion, so I hope you enjoy the show. Hey, Gav, how you doing? Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Nice to meet you too.
Cool. So for people who are unaware of you and haven't come across you perhaps with your engineering leadership content on LinkedIn, do you want to explain a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm Gavin. I currently consult to startups and scale-ups on engineering leadership and engineering management. Engineering leadership, I kind of divide into the tech, the people, and the process, and I'm most passionate about and focus on the people and process side of things. So I write and coach and kind of help companies like build in frameworks for leadership and progression and performance management and that kind of thing. Startups often don't have that, and they grow massively, and they kind of, it really helps them to have those structures in place.
Yeah, absolutely. People are always talking about the technical side of scaling architecture, but they never, well, it's always the forgotten thing, isn't it? That people, how important and critical people are to the process of scaling technology, because someone's got to write the code at least for the next few years while ChatGPT is getting better.
Absolutely. And I see startups often like, oh, we had two teams and they did some amazing stuff. You know what would be like way faster is 12 teams. Is 20 teams, and they then it's like, why is everything slowing down? Why does no one know what to work on? Why are they always fighting about stuff? And this is what I want to talk about, like leadership, communication, teamwork, processes, standards, structures, working with HR, all that kind of big corporate stuff, which actually like medium-sized companies can really benefit from being good at.
Absolutely. I was going to say as well, it seems like you're, for the audio listeners, I was going to say, it seems like you're a bit of a botanist as well, as you're surrounded by plants.
Yes, I like having color in the background, and plants are just pretty. I can't guarantee that these will be the same plants you see in 6 months' time. I'm still working on the whole keeping the plants alive thing.
If it's any consolation, if I have a plant out for more than a couple of seconds, the cat will try and eat it. So, yeah. In fact, that's something I should have mentioned in the pre-show is that if my cat jumps into the microphone, I apologise both you and the listeners for the booming noise, because he has made a habit of that recently. I'm afraid. So taking it back to your original story, obviously you've been in this industry for sort of 20 plus years. How did you break in originally? What inspired you, and what was the process to actually get in?
So I'm actually a second generation software developer. My dad was writing COBOL back in the 80s. And so I was always around computers from a young age. But when I finished school, I wanted to go into acting. And I kind of looked at the options, acting, tech. And even in the 90s, tech was definitely like a better deal. So I went and studied programming and networking and a bunch of like, you know, mid-90s computery stuff, and ended up doing tech support. And I found with every tech support job I had, writing code, building an app, doing something like that just made everything better. And I realized, okay, I need to focus on software development. Like the tech support thing is not for me. So I got into web dev. I went into the web 99, 2000, basically IE3, 4, around that time. I'm a veteran of the Internet Explorer wars. I survived IE6, all those fun, interesting front end and web dev challenges. Yeah,
I've heard the horror stories about a lot of Internet Explorer versions. Actually, I was very lucky in the sense that I more or less broke into the industry just after widespread support for it was just kind of decided to be dropped. And from everything I've heard, I thank my lucky stars that I've ended up in that. So, well, I mean, this is really interesting for me, right? Because I became a front-end developer in 2017. So you said sort of late 90s, around year 2000. What was the average front-end developer using technology-wise around then?
Tech-wise, front-end devs were hand-coding their CSS. I remember when jQuery started and what like a revolution that was. You didn't have to write code that would work on IE and then, you know, have a case statement or an if statement to write code that would work on Netscape Navigator. You could just write stuff that just worked everywhere, which was mind-blowing. And at front end then really was front end. You were really much more about like the layout and the design. The people you worked most closely with were designers. Back end was often very separate. And so, yeah, just your text editor, your Photoshop or your kind of cutting up tools or just for me, very much text editing, doing stuff by hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very different to how it is different. Now, where yes. we just get everything added to us now in front end. It's almost we have a wealth of tools that we can use. I mean, it's interesting to hear that about jQuery. I mean, having kind of been in the industry for both, would you say this is very specific? But would you say jQuery or React was like the bigger revolution?
Oh my goodness, I think like I don't think you can compare them and say that one was bigger. But they definitely kind of more like one kind of led to another. Like jQuery brought about standardization, let you build more faster. And then React definitely like blew things up in terms of being able to build like entire web apps in a standard, simple way instead of like piecing small non-standard components together.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about because I think what you're saying about, I didn't know that actually about how you had to take into account each browser before jQuery. I had to have the edge cases for each browser. So I guess you just have a ton of, you know, control flow and conditions that you're running through. But I couldn't imagine how complicated that would make things. Like, I suppose React kind of goes the same way where it suddenly becomes quite complicated. But yeah, I can imagine how much of an impact that makes.
Yeah, I think just, you know, the kind of things you do now on the front end were almost impossible to imagine 20 years ago. I remember for the first time writing some front end code that could pull in real time from the back end and change the web page without reloading it. And it was just mind blowing. Like, you know, and then 2 years later, XHR is everywhere. Like, that's just boxed down. That's just what you do. Like, a web page that, like, has to refresh to reload. Like, what year is it? 2002. But, like, back then, doing it for the first time, you don't just have a static page and, like, you know, the latest orders just updates. Like, tech moves so quickly. Front end has moved so quickly. Like, I kind of checked out of that around 2015. Like, I stopped being hands-on technically around 2015. And I just look at JavaScript now and it's completely foreign and confusing. And, you know, because the state of the art has advanced so much and new tools, new language standards, new practices have developed.
Yeah. And I think with all this new stuff that is potentially coming out, like WebGL, we've been talking about that in my work a lot, and what we can do with that for stuff like visualization, and then WebAssembly could be a big threat, and potentially no longer writing the code in JavaScript, moving over to something like Rust for WebAssembly. So there's even more exciting stuff to come. So if you I find with front end, like, if you're the sort of person that always likes to be learning new things, and that's the best that's the best side of things to get into.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like your web browser is the operating system now. You know, back in my day, at least 20 years ago, the web browser was an app you launched to visit a website and get information. Now the web browser is the operating system. Everything runs through a web browser.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. It's almost like the internet sleptwalked into being something completely different. And when I explain it to people about how the internet actually works, I say it's essentially a document exchange network. And then it doesn't really, actually these days, that's not how it's used. Whereas before it's just, you're just sending for, well, I mean, obviously that is how it works under the hood, but it felt like that more. I mean, I remember when I was getting online and, you know, I must have been about seven in 2004 and just going on the BBC Sport website to look at the football and rugby results. And I found that mind-blowing enough, but it would just be getting a static, you know, page. And I just thought it was crazy that you could just get served the stuff instantaneously. And it's amazing what you end up taking for granted now with what the web browser is capable of.
And
for you, you mentioned not being hands-on for the last few years. What made you make that decision, first off, to go more towards leadership and people management? And how did you actually do it? Because a lot of people find it, if they haven't done it before, feel that it's a really clouded thing. Like, how do you jump from being hands-on to hands-off?
Yeah, that's a great question. I almost sort of fell into it in my first job as a web dev. I worked in a small agency and I was there for like 6 years and I moved up the ranks and ended up being the team lead of the devs. And I'd been listening to podcasts and I found the Manager Tools podcast and they spoke about like do one-to-ones and talk to people and this is how you get the best out of people. And I thought this was really fascinating. Because I wanted to be managed well. So I was just taking notes, you know, to try and influence my boss. And then I became the boss, or at least the tech lead. And so I thought, cool, I'm going to try this stuff out and see how it works. And I printed off my one-to-one sheets and sat down with people and said, so tell me about you, tell me about... And it had a real impact. Like people really felt connected and I built relationships that I still have to this day. And from there, I went into freelancing and ended up working for myself because I'm a terrible businessman and my vision of starting my own agency never came to fruition. But I went back to the industry with the goal of getting into leadership. That's what I was really passionate about because for me, I love people. I love getting the best out of people. I find those complicated, woolly, uncertain, unfamiliar challenges to be the most interesting. I eventually ended up as the head of dev for a small agency, had a couple of teams under me, very tight deadlines, very old tech, platform falling over, lots of fires to put out, and lots of code for me to write. And it was just fun and fascinating to kind of get the best of these different people, build up a team, hire people, delegate to them. And so when I moved on from there, I decided I want to do this full time. I didn't want to be split between needing to be on top of the tech, needing to be thinking of the technology, you know, is it up to date? Am I staying on top of things, which like you were saying earlier, is a full-time job. It's five people's full-time job just to stay on top of front end. You know, no one person can cope, never mind someone who wants to also focus on the practice of leadership and the craft of management and that sort of stuff. So for me, it was going to getting some experience in leadership, getting, you know, some evidence that I could do it and do it well. And then in my next job saying, right, I want to do this full time. This is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to be doing any coding. That's for my teams to do. And it worked. People were like, cool. And I just went from there, more teams, more people, and now doing my own thing.
Yeah, I guess it's a very unique challenge because normally we think about things in binary terms, but this is very analog. Solving people's problems is so analog, and it presents a really unique challenge, especially when you've been solving binary issues for, you know, however long before you made that step. So it's definitely adds an interesting dynamic to your career to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah. I think being an IC, at least I can talk about software dev teams primarily, but being an IC is great. You have a lot of structure around you. You know, work is organized around teams. Teams will often have a tech lead or a principal engineer or a scrum master or a BA or a product manager, or all these people whose job it is to make sure that work comes to the team, that, you know, a task board is managed, that work flows through, that there's processes, and you work on the stuff that's on our tickets, which often have acceptance criteria and tests that need to pass. And you get, like, every week you get to say, you get to look at the board and go, I did this. You get to look at an app or a site or a product and go, I made that. And then you jump into management and leadership. There's no task board. No one's really saying, okay, this week I expect you to accomplish this. They just want to know, are you getting results? Is your team delivering? And when you work with people, the cycles are so long running, and you often have to look back and go, did that succeed? Well, I think it kind of did. Could it have gone better? That's an interesting question. And there's so much wooliness and so much uncertainty, and you really have to get good at kind of understanding the structure of your own work and putting that own structure in place. And people who like those kind of complex challenges are more likely to thrive. The benefit, I think, to people switching into that kind of thing is very much, if you care about people, you can do well, but also impact and influence. You get to impact, like, more people, more projects, more products as you kind of work your way up into leadership and management.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, it's interesting what you say about the structure changing and how you have to kind of manage your own, I can't think of the right word, but like accomplishments, in the sense of, like, it is very simplistic to be a software engineer almost, because not saying it's easy, of course, but when you look at the board and saying, like, look, I'm working on this, I'm working on that, like, particularly, like, I work for a large company, and, you know, we have a scrum master, I have an engineering manager that I report to, and, you know, I more or less just get the tickets served up, and it's almost like I'm a chef in a restaurant. That's the closest analogy. I just grab a ticket and be like, okay, instead of it being, you know, a couple of steaks, it will just be change this button to blue. Although I wish my job was just that easy.
Yes.
But yeah, and then going from that to being something where it's a lot more unpredictable, slash you don't know what effects are happening, you don't know how other people are doing their own thing. Like, something I found much easier from being a software engineer, so I'm a career changer, I used to be a technical recruiter and software sales. Oh, cool. And I found technical recruitment an absolute nightmare, because the candidates were people with a mind of their own.
Yes.
And I, of course, like, naturally, of course, they've got their own lives, but my absolute nightmare would always be, I'm going to go home and discuss this with my family. And then you just knew the next day that offer was falling right through. And nice. I said to myself, but one of the reasons why I became a software engineer was, like, I want to be able to control my own outcomes more. So it's an interesting challenge. I mean, what would you say to people that are, say they've been a senior engineer for a couple of years and, you know, they've been maybe helping mentor more junior devs on the team, like a collaborator and a scrum master more, and now they're sort of saying, right, do I go full IC and climb the ladder that way and go up to, I guess I've seen people being called distinguished engineers is the new IC job title. And I swear they keep inventing new job titles. Yes. Or going into the people management side of things. What advice would you give to them to help them make that decision?
I would say try it. I mean, that's the simplest one. Like, take on some responsibility for projects. Start, you mentioned mentoring, but almost take over some of that responsibility for mentoring people and work with your manager to set kind of outcomes that are based on that. In terms of deciding whether you want to properly switch tracks into leadership, I think it's what kind of problems you're attracted to. The people I find that are most encouraged to switch over are the ones who are coming to me in one-to-ones and going, you know, what would make us more effective is if we changed the process like this and did that. And if we worked with that other team more closely, you know, then we would get better quality inputs. And, you know, they're talking about the process. They're talking about influence. They're talking about communication with others. And the people who I find are more destined to leadership in the IC track are talking about, well, this technology platform is more useful. And yes, switching will have this kind of cost, but here's the long-term benefit. And I think we can explain the pros and cons of this in this way. And they kind of have a deep understanding of the systems and how the software and systems and tools and tech kind of work together. And they're good at explaining that to other people, from juniors to seniors to stakeholders, and helping them understand that. Whereas the people leadership tends to see problems and challenges in the team through the lens of individuals, through the lens of processes. That's been the key kind of difference for me. When I talk to someone, I go, have you ever thought about being a manager? Versus people would say, you need to be a principal engineer, definitely. Definitely don't manage people.
That's quite an interesting litmus test almost, where you say to the person, we have this problem, and whether they present a technical architecture solution or a process change, that almost gives you the answer of like, I'm not trying to make this sound like a sorting hat in Harry Potter or something like that. Where it just, you know, if your instinct goes that way, I guess that kind of makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I like we said about just try it. Like, people get really obsessed with the sunk cost idea of, I do this, so I have to do this forever. You know, you can be a manager and then decide, oh, Azure on DIC, and then decide you want to go the other way again. Like, organizations will often be very open to that, in my experience.
Very much so, yeah. And good organizations like people who are ambitious, who try new things, who switch careers like you did. There's a lot of value in trying different things. And I think teams can value from having specialists, people who are like, know what they want, are in the track, who deeply understand their niche, but also from people who are generalists, who've tried a lot of different things and have a lot of kind of varied experience. You want both in your teams.
I think that's an interesting point as well about the career changes. I think you can often really... it's very easy to feel sensitive about being a career changer sometimes, where you get the imposter syndrome, where it's like, man, I didn't go through all of this stuff that everyone else did. I'm a faker because I'm self-taught, or I went to a boot camp or whatever. And actually something, or you tell yourself, I wasted X amount of years doing a completely unrelated thing. And actually you can really lean into it. I find particularly on the engineering management side of things, because so much of it is business rather than technical. And it's kind of bridging the two. You can really lean on the skills no matter what you did before. There's always something out of the box that you'd be amazed, I find, like what you could pick up and what you can use in a role from a previous career.
Yes, I love working with career switchers. I love interviewing and hiring career switchers. I've worked with managers who switched over from being scrum masters, from being product people. So it's not just a case that you move through tech and then you move into tech leadership. I've had people who kind of moved up in parallel career tracks. I know teachers who've switched into engineering management, which, I think switching careers, you always bring a lot of value with you, a different perspective, a different insight. Like, it's never a waste to switch over from something else. There's always ways of applying, even if it is just a kind of just having learned a different way to approach problems. You know, like that saying, if all you have is a hammer. No, what? I've gone blank on it now.
If the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem seems like a nail. I'm a big fan of that.
Exactly that. Yes. And so if you grow up like I did in tech, you know, what's the solution? Let's download a new library. Let's find a new platform. Let's find a new technology. That'll solve this. And people who come from outside have wildly different ways of thinking about those problems, and they can really bring like valuable out-of-the-box ideas to this. So someone with your background in recruiting is potentially going to think about like, what if we get someone with different skills, or how can we like bring new ideas and bring diversity into the space instead of just going at it from a, you know, tech will solve all the problems.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that you mentioned teachers as well as being strong career changers, because that's an opinion I've held for a long time. A lot of the strongest career changing devs that I've worked with and that I've collaborated with in general have been teachers. I just think there's so much so many skills that you pick up as a teacher that translate so well into this industry. And I've worked with a lot of very successful career changers. I mean, that does mean there's an issue with the education system, because these people decide they can't do teaching anymore and want to do something else, that's a different problem. But their loss is tax gain.
Yes, definitely. And they bring, like, being an excellent dev has so many multifaceted skills, the hard skills, the human skills. And I find career switches often come with a lot of those human skills. They often understand, like, collaboration better. They often understand teamwork better. Just not having grown up in it, they kind of have they're willing to go, more often willing to go, okay, I don't know this, I don't understand that, and ask those, like, naive, innocent, but super valuable questions about why we're doing what we do and about how we're solving those problems that really kind of help bring out better outcomes.
And then as well, I find when you climb the ladder a bit as well and you're dealing with stakeholders more, it's the classic problem of explaining technical issues in non-technical jargon without, and this is something I'm still working on a lot now that I'm working with stakeholders more, is you have to hit a line between kind of not patronizing the non-technical stakeholder, but then also as well not saying a load of stuff that's just going to fly completely over their head. And it's one of those things, it's like, it's a super difficult skill to master, I think.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Like, and so whenever I talk about people growing in their career, I think everyone can benefit from leadership and from practicing and growing their leadership skills, whether you plan to stay in the IC track or not. In fact, like, as you move up the IC track, people think they're going to spend more time coding and spend more time on tech. You spend less time. Mm. You spend way more time sitting in a meeting with some non-technical person, pointing at some boxes on a PowerPoint presentation so that you can get them to agree that that box should point to that box from now on, and to give you the budget to go ahead and do that. And so you spend your whole time and energy influencing. You're not managing people. You're not telling people what to do, but you are using your, like, knowledge and respect and deep understanding and deep ability to communicate complexity to people. Leadership, it's all, like, growing up in your career is all about leadership.
Yeah, it's, the thing is, there's this weird, like, perception. I saw a TikTok on my For You page the other day, that actually was like maybe sort of scream internally, with frustration, because it was, even the title on me, it was like top five careers where you don't have to talk to people but earn a lot of money. And literally I knew it was coming as soon as I saw it. I knew it was coming. Literally number one was software engineer. And I was thinking, no, like, it is so important to be able to talk to people, because otherwise you won't advance in your career. And as you say, the more senior you get, it doesn't matter if you're IC, people management, the more you're going to have to do the stakeholder management. Just the stakeholders are just slightly different, and what you're managing is slightly different.
Yeah. And even if you're just, and I use air quotes there, just a senior engineer, you need to explain what you're doing to a junior engineer on your team. You need to delegate work to them. You need to coach them and mentor them. And if you can't work with people, if you can't explain that stuff, you're stuck and your influence and impact is going to be limited. The only way to have a big impact is to be able to share and convey your ideas to other people. And that's leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of switching it a little bit towards the other aspect of your career as well as leadership, is that you've done kind of contracting and freelancing for quite a long time. How's that experience been? Because probably particularly on TikTok, I get that question all the time. And I think I know where that question comes from, is because people see very high day rates. They're like, so how do I get into this then? So how is the experience for you getting into contracting, and what have you learned from it?
The biggest challenge for me is, I think, a very stereotypical one coming from a tech background. You understand your product, you understand what you're doing, you understand what you're working on, and that's great. But you also now, you're a small business owner. You need to be thinking about sales, you need to be thinking about marketing, you need to be thinking about cash flow and, like, what you do, what you're going to do when that contract runs out and when you need to get the next one and how you're going to find your clients and how you get a network and all that stuff. Whereas if you're just a jobbing full-time developer, those are things that are not important. Those are someone else's problem. So that's been the kind of the most interesting challenge for me, is realizing my kind of weaknesses in those and having to like upskill myself and learn new concepts and brand new things, which I just didn't need before.
Yeah, I think something that I've seen from contracting, I mean, it's something I've done actually, but not as a dev. It was talking about my career story again, because the whole audience has heard it in drips and drabs over 70 episodes. But when I realized that I wanted to be a dev, I was like, right, I need to save up some money to be able to take some time off. So I contracted as a technical recruiter during a very... Basically, the better day rates happen, as you can imagine, when the VC money is sloshing around. And yes. This was this is a few years ago, so the VC money was being chucked around. So I was able to use that as an opportunity to save up. And I found that I did a few contracts, and it was like the biggest thing was you just have to get so used to selling yourself and interviewing. Yeah. And that can be a hard enough skill, because all the stereotypes are around like the leak code and that kind of thing, but actually selling the immediate value add, because you're not being seen as you are being seen as an investment, but yeah. More in the sense of like very literal, not like we're investing your potential, we're investing in the value you can have from literally day one.
Yeah. And the challenges are different. And I think you need to, beyond the day rate, you need to think about what you want to get out of how you spend your time at work. You know, if you're a normal full-time dev, your manager probably sits with you and goes, so tell me how you want to develop your career. Let me give you opportunities. Yes, we can put you on that project. Oh, you want to find out more about that tech stack? Sure, we can second you to that team. You know, we can send you on training courses. When you're a contractor, you're being hired probably to do the work no one else wants to do, or the stuff that is boring and uninteresting but needs to get done quickly. You get a lot less choice in what you work on, and you definitely don't have anyone kind of looking out for you and looking out for your career development. That's entirely up to you. And yeah. You need to then start planning your career and going, you know, am I following a dead end on the tech stack that I'm selling my time on? How do you make a switch? How do you like move to a different track, even just inside tech as a contractor? You know, if all you're contracting is PHP and you decide you want to switch to Ruby, that's really hard as a contractor, because you're going to go and apply for a Ruby job and they're going to go, well, you don't have any Ruby experience. Sorry, we'll go hire a Ruby contractor. So everything's trade-offs. Yes, the money might be better, but there's a lot of stuff that you get for free in a full-time job. I use free in air quotes there, that you have to think about and plan and do yourself if you're a contractor.
Yeah, it's not clear of not as clear of a choice as a lot of people let it on to be. And I think a saying, I can't remember who told me the saying, but someone said to me, in each role, be that a contractor or a perm role, you got to be either learning or earning. Yeah. Great if you're doing both, but realistically, learning or earning, or at least leaning towards one of the two, and that's a good way to think about it. And I guess under earning, you can also be thinking, how good of an investment is this? Like you were saying, you know, are you getting stuck down a dead end? Which, you know, PHP is something that's on the decline. Whereas, you know, if you were trying to think of something that's off the top of my head, I guess Svelte is something that's growing, but something like React is going to be around for 20 years now, because it's just in everything. I mean, there's a reason why PHP is still kicking around everywhere. You know, it's about getting the experience. Is this going to help me get my next contract or my next perm role? You know, I always just say to people, just start thinking of yourself as a one-person business, like a one-person consultancy firm. Whether you're a permanent or a contractor, it's the best way to look at it, and you'll get way better results.
Definitely. And another aspect is, when you're a full-time dev, people are hiring you because you're, say, a JavaScript dev, or because you're, say, a front-end dev. And when you're a contractor, you need to start thinking about actually delivering solutions. Yes, your tools are JavaScript, or your tools are React, your tools or whatever, but you need to be able to sell your ideas and sell your time and sell yourself in terms of what you actually, what the outcomes are and what the outputs are, and try and almost go, oh, the tech isn't, you know, it's not the tech that's important, it's what I deliver that's important. And that's a real mindset shift if you're hyper focused on what the technologies are.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things that I found, was the slow realization as I got into this career, was that the only people who care about your stack are other engineers. Nobody else cares. Like, I don't know if you've come across Peter Levels much before, but he's a Dutch indie hacker who He's basically famous for launching successful one-person businesses, and he's doing all kinds of mad stuff in AI. And he always says all he uses still in 2023 is his stack is jQuery and PHP. And people are like, why don't you build in like the latest and greatest? He's like, the best framework is the one you know and what you can deliver value. And he says the customers don't care. As long as the product works, the customers couldn't care less what's under the hood, which is something that's always worth remembering for people.
Yeah, definitely.
And actually, now that we're talking about kind of career strategy and technologies to learn and everything in between, actually, let's flip it to the other end of the career. Let's say someone has just gone to a point where they're ready for their first job, be that they've graduated from a comp sci degree, finished a boot camp, or they've done well enough and done enough self-teaching that they're ready to apply for that first job. What do you advise them?
That's an interesting one. And like, I've been in that, I was in that position a very long time ago. So I can't really talk towards the kind of technology side of things or what's topical. Really, I can speak more as a hiring manager, someone who might be like hiring people for that position. And what I think is important is definitely knowing your tools, because if you're being hired as a junior, as an entry-level person, we kind of expect you to have some understanding of your tools. You don't have to be brilliant, and you're almost certainly going to be paired with someone else and be working with other people who can support you. But we expect you to care and understand the technology and your stack and to be able to deliver with that. Past that, the things that give you an advantage are being able to talk about leadership topics. Even if you are just entry level and coming in, being able to show that you think about more than just the technology you're working on and why it's great. Having an understanding of business and how it works, being able to demonstrate that you understand how work comes to a team and why and how work is prioritized. And then the fact that it gets delivered to users. We're not just building software or building tools or products because they're cool and it's fun to code. We're actually trying to make stuff that people want to use or pay for. And being able to understand that business impact and understand that user impact will go a long way to making you stand out as someone who isn't just focused on technology, but is focused on building the right thing. Just like you said, like the tech is important and useful, but also isn't. And knowing where that line is and where that trade-off is, and at least being able to speak to that can really help you stand out.
Yeah, I think my hot take for anyone that's trying to get their first job in tech as a developer, if anything, the non-technical, and I really hate this expression, but soft skills, because it implies they're somehow lesser than, and they're really not.
I like using human skills because it's more about people and communication and relationships and influence.
Yeah, see, I think it's 60% human skills and 40% technical skills to get that first job, because of course you need to be at a certain level technically, but if a company is making the investment in hiring an entry-level developer, which one is great, two means that they are understanding that they know you're not going to add complete value from day one, because they're expecting you to ramp up and take some time to become quote unquote profitable for them. So they're looking at you as an investment. It's almost like, you know, in football terms, if they buy a promising 17-year-old striker, they're not expecting him to bang in 30 goals in the his first season. They're doing that so that they can collaborate and invest together. And if you can demonstrate as an entry level person that you're the kind of person that's going to give them value over time through your human skills, then that's super important.
Yeah, and as someone who wants to help startups and scale ups, like I want to say hire more entry-level people, hire more juniors, hire more career switchers. So often I see companies go, we need to hurry to market. We need to build the best thing. We'll just hire seniors. And a room full of seniors can do a lot of great and interesting work, but they're expensive if you only hire seniors. They're much more in demand. A team that has a whole lot of different skill levels, a whole lot of different experiences, a whole lot of different energy levels and approaches can potentially be a higher performing team than a team that's just seniors. And it gives you a chance to have a wider access to the market. Just diverse teams give you more opportunity to build good teams and build good products.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know it's not, I know I'm kind of contradicting myself a little bit here, where I was saying like, oh, the end user doesn't care about the tech stack. But another advantage of having the entry level people in is they've learned the newest standards. They've learned the newest frameworks. Like the big thing that I was able to have as a technical value add for me was React hooks were brand new. And the thing that all the cool kids were using and that all the senior devs hadn't had time to learn yet. So my kind of deal was like, look, you teach me more of the fundamentals of React and I'll show you how these hooks work. Yes. It was basically how it ended up working out for me.
That's and that's exactly the kind of energy that is like why I love working with like junior and entry level and new people. They bring that excitement and passion for tech and for trying new things, which just benefits the team, benefits seniors. You know, we were saying earlier how like there's so much to learn and understand, and being able to have someone with a new idea come in and go, I think React hooks, for example, are the future. Let's try it in this project. And you also go, okay, let's see how it goes. And to then work on hands-on and learn that way instead of having to go off and build your own project and, you know, experiment on your own or stick to all the stuff you know. Hire juniors.
Absolutely. Louder for the people at the back, as the kids say.
Yes.
I'll boost the volume of that clip. actually, I won't, because headphone users will be very upset with me. But let's just imagine that boosted by 100 times. So interestingly, speaking of, you know, entry-level people are getting into the industry now, what do you think the industry looks like over the next 10 to 20 years with the rise of kind of AI-assisted coding tools, new processes, remote work being now just accepted norm? What do you think this industry looks like in the near future?
That is such that's a difficult question to answer. Like if I try and step back 20 years and think what it would look like now, I would have been way off. I'll tell you where I want the industry to go, and that is to really embrace diversity. Mm-hmm. To really, like we spoke about career changes, but from like my work, my passion is to bring diversity into leadership, but also into tech in general. Bring in people from underrepresented groups, bring in neurodivergent people. And there's so much value there, not just in terms of like being able to hire more, be have access to a bigger market, having people in your teams that understand the end users. But also like with the rise in AI, people are talking more about ethics. People are talking, understanding more, hold on, what is the actual human and societal impact of the software writing? People are asking those questions, and AI is pushing them to like think about that. And I think I would hope in 10 or 20 years, software people are much more thinking about the like final human impact of their work. They're not just building software because the tech is cool or because it's a nice product to make, but they realize that the world runs on technology. Everything is tech. Which means like everything we do as tech people is in a way political because it affects real human beings. And I would hope that we're very much more, that's just a part of our day-to-day work, is thinking about the human impact, not just the technological or business impact of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The ethics side of things is absolutely huge. And I think generally as well, it's almost being ambassadors for the industry as well. Like the amount of times I've explained to people that, AI can be biased, and they say, well, how can a computer be biased? And it's like, well, you know, they make decisions based on the data they're fed. It's not their fault. They're not a bad computer. But like if you feed them bad data, then you know you're going to get bad results. And you know, I think being, as I said, being an ambassador for that, and you know, kind of keeping that in mind in your role is so important, particularly if you're doing anything on the AI side of things.
That
being such an emerging industry with potentially such a huge impact on that, it's really important to keep in mind.
Very much so.
Yeah. Cool. But yeah, it's kind of a heavy note to leave it on, but something really worth thinking about.
Yes, I think it's really important, and it's a fundamental of the work I'm doing. Like that's the basin of why I think we need more diversity in tech, is because tech impacts every corner of the world, every human being, just about, unless you live on a remote island and like, you know, you are using tech, are impacted by tech. So I think we need diverse decision makers and people that care and are passionate about like that human impact in every room.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. And if people want to get in touch with you, Gav, what's the best way?
LinkedIn, the world's best social network for talking to recruiters and business stuff. LinkedIn is definitely the best way. Like I signed up to Mastodon a couple of months ago, and that's kind of wobblingly taken off, but LinkedIn is definitely the best.
And now there's, I mean, to be fair, it's amazing how much the news changes around the Bird app.
Yes.
when I record these, and maybe they come out a few weeks afterwards, it's currently now x.com. Who knows what's that going to be?
Who knows?
What that's going to be. Yeah. So Mastodon will probably still be around. So I'll put those links in the description. But thanks so much for coming on today. Thank you. Been an awesome chat and really good to talk about the leadership side of things, because I think that's just not talked about enough in terms of software engineering careers. We get focused on the ones and zeros, and we're not as focused on the people.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much to talk about leadership, and embracing leadership topics like will help you stay on your career and help you move up the career ladder much more quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you as well to the listeners for tuning in to another episode of The Coder Career. Do find us on all streaming platforms every other Monday. Have a great week.